Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to In Our Craft or Sullen Art. I am Pam Ray, and while we are waiting for the host of the show to call in, who had planned to read us to us with his wonderful voice, I guess for lack of anything else, all right. Well, here we go.
Good evening, everybody. This is a very late host, but unfortunately, I had fallen asleep. I got to tell you that. But was resurrected by a phone call from the vault of heavens. I am assuming it's you. So I apologize for that. This evening is a visitation with Aleister Crowley, and it's because of Pam Ray, who had the inspiration to find this. Get it set up. You have a program at all, probably. Aleister Crowley was born Edward Alexander Crowley, 12 October 1875. He died in December 1947. He was an English oculist, philosopher, ceremonial magician, poet, painter, novelist, and mountaineer. He founded the religion of Thelema, identifying himself as the prophet entrusted with guiding humanity into the Aeon of Horus in the early 20th century. A prolific writer, he published widely over the course of his life. And Pam had given me some quotes that I thought were fascinating. And apparently a lot of people, other people did too, because we've got 25 solid entries. And we'll fit as many of them as we can into the show tonight. I want to welcome Pam Ray. Pam?
Hello, Lauren. Good to have you here.
How badly were you panicking?
Oh, you know what? To be honest, not too bad, because I knew our good Gene would just be there, like, poking you between the ribs, you know, making sure you woke up. And in the meantime, I already had the page open to Aleister Crowley's poetry, because I figured if I got done talking and you still weren't there, I'd read one of his poems. Then if you still weren't there, I'd, you know. So I was maybe a tiny, teeny bit panicking, but not too much, because I figured I had the first, 10 minutes covered, and that would give Gene enough time to wake you up.
Oh, boy. God bless her for calling. It was indeed, I can't imagine it was. And the last thing I remember was about 9 o'clock, and I was sitting here, and I was about to make coffee to assure my staying awake. And that's the last thing I remember until that very piercing phone call came through, and I got to say thank you. That's the last time we do this music. I'll tell you that much. That's why you need an introduction. Otherwise, you just got silent.
Absolutely,
all right.
I'm very excited. All right, sounds good. And I'm very excited for tonight's poetry. I'm so glad people were inspired. Very cool. And with that being said, I'm going to start us out, or I'm going to put up The Hermit Grey 2, Why Would I Save Her, by Ben Hart. And go ahead, please, Lauren, and give that a read for us.
You're giving me the strong stuff right off the bat. I like it. Okay. The Hermit Grey 2, Why Would I Save Her? I will do what I must, even if it means showing mercy to warriors of dark ritual, even if it means erasing our own empathy to one we love and endanger the balance. I will do what I must, even if it means betraying love. In your quest for power, until you fail to see power is only what you can walk away from. You stand to save, but evil arises. I suppose all that much darkness does is blind. Two, you love what you have. Excuse me, three. You love what you have, what you could become, and what you'd have then. I love what I am. I love what she makes me. I love forever in absence of possession. Four, dreams are a descend now into worlds of nether, either kind or unkind, for so is life, but never cruel, never cruel. You, my Lord, you are cruel. Yes, you, Lord of slumber, where you chain dreams and dim blind men behind their eyes, when all they should be doing, building fleeting heavens for muses everlasting, in service, not in asking, in conscious love, not in slavery of heart, where you keep her lovelorn, the light of dawn, an arc into awakening. And I am like you in one way, Lord. I take what I want, but not for the sake of calling myself its master, but to honor myself as its servant instead, because some men are good men with good hearts and fewer words every day to fight with. Try and make that heaven last, a beacon of a good love, burning forever in your dark, unchained. Five, the breathlessness, it is a kind of lullaby to some, but to you, fallen master of good standing, I intend it to be a nightmare, a ripple in the still, the quiet light we serve in exile, not indifferent, you not fallen. Sleep now, cruel one, and be forgotten soon by some. Six, you're here with him. How far into dark must you be lost, for I am worthy of your love? Because I am only as strong as my master commands. End quote.
Great read there, Lauren.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that he was inspired by multiple prompts and the direction in which he took this, almost like an answer to the often dark nature of Crowley's writing and thoughts. And I, as always, Ben has amazing imagery and metaphors. A strong vignette. I really appreciate how he speaks in this poem on acting on behalf of love and rather than the need for power and control. And it's beautifully written all the way through. But I do especially like you love what you have, what you could become and what you'd have then. I love what I am. I love what she makes me. I love forever in absence of possession. And I am like you in one way, Lord. I take what I want, but not for the sake of calling myself its master, but to honor myself as its servant instead, because some men are good men with good hearts and fewer words every day to fight with to try and make that heaven last. I like how he speaks on making that heaven last, that heaven that comes with using the right words and the right actions that not only lift you up, but lift other people up as well. An excellent write and very well done.
The most worthy comment, and did a great job of that. Yeah, I was struck by the poem rather strongly. I quoted one stanza, yes, you, Lord of Slumber, where you chain dreams and dim blind men behind their eyes. But all they should be doing is building fleeting heavens for muses everlasting. I thought his second and third stanzas, and I have to agree with you all the way, by the way, Pat. I thought his second and third stanzas showed the power of love as opposed to the power that can bend the physical to your will. The quoted stanza is a thing of real beauty and clarity towards what should be. Powerful stuff. Welcome right in the contest. Great job.
Absolutely. I have to agree. And up next, we have Falling Disgraced Universe by Jenny the Deep. And it goes like this. Mercy rain down on me. Please don't leave me forsaken. Lead me into your light, out of the dark, O Almighty One. Hear this sinner's plea, I cry. Release me from this web of lies that has been spun, saving me from the fiery pits below, ruled with guilt, choking the life out of all who doubted. Is her wrath in her wrath, engulfing lost souls with smoke, enveloped in flames, ignited by fear, descending onto a blazed abyss. Closing my charcoal eyes, my vessel burns, no longer in sunset bliss, officially failed by the universe. End poem.
That was a great read. Thank you very much, Pamela. Now, Jenny impresses me more and more every time that I read one of her poems. And when she says, O Almighty One, hear the sinner's plea, I cry. Release me from this web of lies that has been spun. I couldn't help but think of the turbulence called I, which was stated in prompt 11, and reinforced by the other quotes that were listed as strongly evident in this poem, the cry of anguish, guilt, a sinner's plea, as she so well stated. Well done, Jenny. And I gotta, before we go any further, now that I've finally caught my breath, I just wanted to speak to the fact that I had intended simply to begin by this evening by talking about Alistair and his life and his history, et cetera. I'd never identified myself, who we were, or anything else. Yeah, I find a little bit embarrassing. And I just wanted to say for the record that this is, of course, in our craft or so in art, which is shown every other Thursday on P Radio. We got that out of the way. Please go ahead and continue, Pam.
All right. A wonderful write by Jenny. I really appreciate and enjoy how she puts this written like a prayer. You know, it opens up with that sinner's prayer, that pleading for mercy, and, you know, release me from this web of lies that has been spun, saving me from the fiery pits below, ruled with guilt. And I like ruled with guilt because I think that can be interpreted two ways. One, the guilty go to the fiery pits below, or you create your own hell with the weight of the guilt that you feel. I like the use of the word abyss, always one of my favorite words. But to me, this speaks strongly on seeking escape from, of course, that web of lies that destroys both body and mind. And so wonderful, right? And very well done. And I'll grab the next one. And we have As Yet Untitled by Unapologetically LMB. And go ahead, Lawrence, please, and give that a read.
I will. As Yet Untitled. Maybe I'm a question straight out of the seedy streets, almost black, like grilled intestines. Feels good in liking such unpleasant things, seizing their sense of grandeur, almost falling apart, walking along a crumbling balcony, weeds in the joins, in the market of a long-forgotten town, I saw great piles of young lemons. Their hardness echoed in the city itself. Narrow streets, a purple blaze of leaves. I, a long ago, scrawled effigy on walls of stone and bloody condemnation. End poem. And I've got to say that the one flaw with this poem was that it was too short. I would have enjoyed something quite a bit longer written in this style. I really like this a great deal. You go ahead, Pat.
You know, I agree, and but for such a short, for a short poem, it definitely packs, you know, it has a strong punch to it. She wrote to the, one of the quotes she wrote, okay, well, I guess not. All right, she wrote to, not the quote I was thinking, but.
Quote 11.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I for some reason, I thought she'd written to the quote about, you know, fall in love with the what is that? Okay, now I got to check. Sorry. Oh, yeah. In the wind of the mind arises the turbulence called I. It breaks down, shower the barren thoughts. All life is choked. And I immediately, when I read her poem, thought of 10, which was keep on acquiring a taste for what is naturally repugnant. This is an unfailing source of pleasure. But I did think this was a strong write. Brilliant visceral imagery and metaphors. You know, I really like that she didn't hold back, and she has the seedy streets almost black like grilled intestines. It feels good in liking such unpleasant things, seizing the sense of grandeur. I like how she brings in the lemons, which, you know, makes you think of like the rusty old broken down cars, and all of those symbols of condemnation, all of those symbols of a rough, a horrible life. And to just, she has within this poem a soaking it all in along with her. And these objects that she's talking about, the streets, the lemons, the cars, and the city itself, all are a representation of the people that she doesn't really mention, but they're represented by the objects. And so, wonderful write and very well done.
And again, a wonderful comment, Pam. I enjoyed your take on that, especially the bit about the lemons. I was somewhat unsure. I had thought maybe they had to do with representation for young people. Your explanation is much more satisfactory. You know, when I read this, I was kind of reminded of a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson. He said, as we are, so we associate. The good, by affinity, seek the good. The vile, by affinity, the vile. Thus, of their own volition, souls proceed into heaven, into hell. When the poet writes, it feels good in liking such unpleasant things, seizing a sense of grandeur, I get the sense that the character is seeking his or her own level. It's the turbulence of I making its own choices, sometimes choking life. I thought it was a profound piece. Thank you very much. Unapologetically, LMB.
Thank you to Naomi,
who's in the room, who's keeping us up to date, supporting us. Appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. Always good to see her. So hello, Naomi. And great comment there, Laurent. All right. Let's see what we have next. We have Yesterday, October 4th by Ken Smith. 31 degrees Celsius. Like summer had taken a wrong turn and had come back to trace its steps. I biked to the marina in the blazing heat, mindful of the cold last night, patrolling the docks in a toque, coat, and sweater before the boarded up closing, the scene in brilliant yellow surfacing in color from black and white, four vessels still loosely rocking in their slips, free to leave, but unsure of where to go, they looked a lot like me. End poem.
Well read, Pam. And the prompt on this was I slept with faith and found a corpse in my arms on awakening. I drank and danced all night with doubt and found her a virgin in the morning. That was one of the quotes that made me absolutely smile. In response to the poem, weather, like life, has a mind of its own and can leave us adrift while still loosely moored. I thought it was an excellent metaphor that was used. Very much enjoyed this brevity, which really does have layers, some layers in it. The style is very sparse, and I enjoy the font that was used as well. For some reason, it really fits this poem. And in those last two stanzas, four vessels still loosely rocking in their slips, free to leave, but unsure of where to go. They look a lot like me. It's so well used to describe the human condition where sometimes, boy, we're all ready. We're ready to leave. But, man, I got no place to go. Nothing to do. You're waiting. The anticipation is there, but there's no impetus to take us in any direction. So, nicely read, Pam. What did you think?
I really enjoyed and appreciated this one, and I thought you had great observations on it. I do like how Ken writes poetry that is straightforward in its style and yet very layered. I told him his weather sounds a lot like ours has been lately with the ups and downs, although more recently more downs. But I love the extended metaphor in this. I thought it was quite brilliant. And all in all, was an excellent write. Altogether, was an excellent write on the unexpected twists and turns of life that leave us questioning our own footing. And I think that comes through all the way, you know, throughout the whole poem. I get that message, but especially on lines. But of unsure of where to go, they looked a lot like me. You know, it's like having to make that decision. It's like when you have freedom, when you have all these freedoms available to you, and you still have to make choices of which are the right ones for you. Just a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done. All right. Let's put Lauren to work again. I think that sounds, or did I, yeah, no, I read that last one. So we're going to put you to work. I put up On My Own Ugly by Liquid Mind Forever. And go ahead, please, Lauren.
I will. I just go on mute there for a second. I have some noise in the background. Okay. My Own Ugly. Joyfully, and the world puts me to death, judges, castrates, inundates, until free will is deftly bereft and left willfully domesticated, emasculated, and incompatibly sedated. Jalapena, 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 jalapen, jalapena, jalapena, and I hope to offend you. Pariah, defiant. Head by it, die it. It's a farce. The whole hello, yellow, fellow, tallow of rotten tomatoes. Everyone knows, tries to blow you off, slough you off, cast you out, and reel you into the net of ill will, kill or be killed. Motto, come eat me, free, not what you think you see. Eat me and be just like me. People are ugly. Forward pays you backward. Aggrandize, lobotomize, sodomize. Make believing we're above the fray. But it's never okay to allay nor say it's okay. Everything is totally back asswards. Still rest assured, allured, inured. What's occurred may be blurred, but eventually believe every word. I don't know that I don't know what I don't know. And though you may try to show me, grow me, blow me, I still own my own double-breasted, ill-rested, tested, ugly one. Repugnant, snick. God damn it. Ram it up yours and cram it, slam it, bam it. Just grin and bear it. But never, not never, no, don't admit shit. And oh.
Bravo there, Lawrence. What a amazing read for an amazing poem. I get the biggest kick out of when Deborah just lets loose with the wordplay, and yet at the same time, you know, always has something thoughtful and intelligent to say. Brilliant imagery and metaphors, hard-hitting lines, like I said, just the absolute most clever wordplay. To me, this write spoke on, you know, and I know it's a very layered write, but one of the thoughts that came to my mind was for this was that was an excellent write on knowing your own strength and standing up against those who try and cut you down. I really liked how she went from jalapena to a la pen, and which made me think of the idea of having a pen that's on fire, having, you know, poetry that you know, spices things up for people. I also really like make believe and we're above the fray, but it's never okay to allay nor say it's okay. Everything is totally back ass words. That is just, I don't know, just I keep saying the word clever, but that's what it is. But I liked how she reminds us of our own power within, especially with the power of words and the power to stand up against people. But at the same time, reminding us that, you know, we are still part of the crowd. You know, I just, I don't know. I like the attitude in this. It's hard-hitting lines. And what's occurred may be blurred is another great line, because it takes a look at those blurred lines, I think, between good and evil, those blurred lines that so oftentimes I think you will see in Aleister Crowley's writing and quotes. And I think she's captured the spirit of his writing quite well while still remaining true to herself. So excellent write and very well done.
That's a great comment, Pam. Thank you. I don't really know Deborah all that well, mostly just from her writings. But from what I do know, she's very much an iconoclast. And probably takes an evil joy in repudiating people who don't understand her or take her the wrong way, etc. When she says, I don't know that I don't know what I don't know. And though you may try to show me, grow me, blow me, I still own my own double-breasted, ill-rested, tested, ugly one, repugnant snit. And I told her that she owns herself. And she takes pleasure in repudiating a world that tries to swallow her without understanding her. I think her wordplay is a source of great enjoyment. It's a melding of what pisses people off, which I think is much to her enjoyment, as she says, an unfailing source of pleasure. I thought it was great work.
Absolutely.
Hey, Pam, I think we're ready to move on.
Yes, absolutely. We have I by Weaver of Dreams, and Kate was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud, so here we go.
In the wind of the mind, turbulence awakes. As the self emerges, the I within it breaks. Barren thoughts cascade, showering down, choking life's essence. using arid ground. A whisper of chaos swirling in the breeze, unleashing turmoil, disturbing inner seas. For within this tempest, the ego takes flight, curtailing existence, veiling truths from sight. But let us not falter, yield not unto despair. Still, amidst the chaos, hope lingers in the air. In the stillness beyond, where clarity resides, we find liberation. There the soul safely hides. Garner the wild winds, let them howl and roar. Breaking down illusions, they shatter and soar. From the ashes of ego, vital new life will arise, unburdened by falsehoods, to reach the skies.
That was a good SoundCloud. Thank you very much, Weaver. And I thought it was a proper adaptation of the prompt. For within this tempest, the ego takes flight, curtailing existence, veiling truths from sight. The ego is a culprit, which I think requires a phoenix-like rising, allowing a new life. And I thought this poem itself is a great message of hope. That prompt that she wrote to number 11, The Tempest Within I, she handles this really, really well. For instance, when she says, for within this tempest, the ego takes flight, curtailing existence, veiling truths from sight, as was just quoted, was one of the salient couplets in this. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree. I liked your observations on this poem, and especially when you commented on ego, which is a difficult thing because, you know, you want to give room for ego to show itself and, you know, be bold and be yourself. But at the same time, you can become, you know, it can basically become like a chokehold. And I have to say that out of all of the one-word titles, it's just creative. It has an impact. It works so well with the prompt and with the poem itself, which is written in these beautiful rhyming couplets with strong imagery and metaphors. As always, Kate did a beautiful read. And I like how this is, to me, about finding balance and calmness while dealing with inner turmoil. And it's beautifully written all the way through, but I especially like where it says, a whisper of chaos swirling in the breeze, unleashing turmoil, disturbing inner seas. And then in the stillness beyond where clarity resides, we find liberation where the soul safely hides. Sometimes we have to learn when to stay still and find that liberation. So excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right. And up next we have Chemical Pregnancy yet again by Z Crescent Fairy. And it goes like this. Chemical pregnancy, oh, I've come to love the term ever since I got acquainted with it, since it's a pregnancy which gets terminated naturally very early on, causing less fuss and less bleeding than a full-blown miscarriage. After 5 kids, I can no longer come to terms with the idea of carrying yet another pregnancy to term, full term. So this is the 5th time I got a chemical pregnancy, thank God. Chemical pregnancy is a breeze, even if it leaves me a bit exhausted. So nowadays, whenever I fear an embryo has embedded into my uterus lining, just because we're wedded to be bedded, a chemical pregnancy is what becomes my silver lining. I never really remember to measure my basal temperature as per the contraceptive method. All I see is nasal fluids, like free-flowing intermediately, nor am I able to keep track of the calendar rhythm method, though I just know how to tap into my circadian rhythm. Yet I find it hard to keep tabs on my biological clock these days. Nowadays, I wish I could just trade places with my very own sister who gets pregnant only after trying so hard for months and after eating fertility pills. And me, OMG, I conceive so easily that a slight mistake and a zygote begins to float away in utero. Thing is, like many Islamically married couples, hubby has far more libido now after decades into our marriage, and I seem to float his boat far more than in our honeymoon years. That is bound to cause more pregnancy scares than ever before. By the way, I'm actually totally scared of the glares and stares people and my own teenage daughter give me when they suspect I'm pregnant. Mom-in-law actually wishes I sleep on the couch to prevent chance of more babies popping out. LOL. I actually do that whenever hubby's been a grumpy grouch, though I also wish so hard that my kids are tube lights when it comes to the process of conception and gestation, since they get too inquisitive about what's going on in my fallopian tubes. Damn YouTube, it teaches them everything. So me telling them lies that being pregnant doesn't mean we had coitus recently and that I could be pregnant from what happened between us years ago just makes them question me more and give me doubt and looks. Modernism's kids, damn it, I never tracked my mom's ovulation or love life. Gah. As for my daughters, they can also never accept that I accept the romantic advantages of a tetchy griper, yet he still spits and hisses like a gaboon viper and is an aggressive as a hunter or a sniper. Yet what can I do when he morphs into a gentle, unapologetic, romantic, non-poetic, roomy or Romeo? Whenever he wants to ride love's racy rodeo and perform as Zollywood's loving cameo, I understand that the chemistry between us is a repulsive mystery to my teenagers, just because hubby is not just a horny guy, but rather also bellows like bulls. So they will forever frown at and be snide about my biochemical pregnancies or pregnancy scares. So I continue to thank God if my pregnancies dissolve like lab chemicals and be just void chemical pregnancies. A pregnancy now will land me in total imbroglio, God forbid. So dear God, please just blast my bladopist each time. I'm done having more birthday blasts. End poem.
Yeah. Oh, that was a lengthy one, Pam, wasn't it? But you know what? I love the way you read that because there were parts of that really made me smile. The parts were a little more thoughtful. The language that is used in some places is delicious. I also wish so hard that my kids are tube lights when it comes to the process of conception and gestation, since they get too inquisitive about what's going on in my fallopian tubes. And then the bit about me telling them lies that being pregnant doesn't mean we had coitus recently, that it could be pregnant for what happened between us years ago. This makes them question me more and give me doubting looks. There's a delicious irony in her words and a little bit of self-deprecating humor. Wow, what a piece. I really like the style and pacing of it. That ironic semi-believing tone that chronicles life and its many bumps and grinds. The relatable piece for the distaff writer. The male nods his head, smiling. What else can he say? It's not his game. And what did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree. I love that she shares something so personal with us, with that irony and that humor that you brought up. She even puts it as a journal entry. And so I think to be this raw and this honest, and to juggle both the seriousness and the humor of life, well, I think it's just something that as a mother of five who easily gets pregnant, you know, you have to learn to find. And, you know, I like especially how she speaks on the judgment and opinions of other people. And, you know, I totally just, you know, had to smile at the mention of the teenagers not understanding it. And when she said, "Modernism's kids, damn it, I never tracked my mom's ovulation or love life. Gah." You know, it was like something we didn't even think of. You know, maybe we accidentally walked in on our parents once, and from then on we tried as much as possible to avoid them. But for the most part, we did not ask them questions. Yep. Like I said, there's a raw honesty in this one that works very well. So I'm glad she shared it with us, and I look forward to reading more of her in the future. And with that being said, I'll move us on to the next one, which is Dream Spaced Fragments by Richard Wiseman. And Richard was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud, so here we go.
Dreamscaped Fragments by Richard Wiseman. Dreamscaped Fragments. Four women. The first is soft, wispy, whimsical, platinum blonde with eyes of blued lakedom. Cold, fragile, feminine. My coarseness wounds her sensitivities. She forgives, returns to me with love, soft to the touch, red to the heart. Easy, familiar, sweet, warm, never too sharp. Second, demonic, insane yet lusty, wanting her emptiness filled, fiery with a heat midst her belly. A mind for dark pleasures. I'm bound, gagged under a foreign time, labeled forever. Imprisoned beneath the house of Salem's tongued nightmare. Extensive, beaten, tortured, and still back for the morrows even. Third, highly intelligent, somewhat elusive, aloof, slightly neurotic undercurrents. But not psychotic as the second, sexually exciting, yes, but not to reveal it entirely, with a fear to restrain from the totality of her potential, then behind the door numbered four. A composite of these, at the airport, making a choice, difficult, wanting all four, or at least three of four. The one, two, three, Freudian slip, the first, third, and fourth, more socially acceptable, besides the psychotic one deemed evil, especially attractive since she's repulsive, hurting fragile feelings of the first by revealing desire towards third and fourth, saddened as I express repressed guilt. She's too sweet for my senseless exteriors. Everything shifts at a diner, poor with the rich debutante, her father's checkbook to hand, paying for everyone, everything, as I, feeling inadequate for my impoverishment, again turn to sudden time-space shifting, back at 22 Radnor Road, the mysteries therein. My room's changed, can't place any books, looking for James in vain. They've moved wake, moved all my books. They, my parents, the evil demonic archetypes of my stunted youth dragon, now climb up into the attic as the yawning drawbridge lowers. We're all figuring I was adopted, immediately waking, wanting to retain all these dreamed fragments to paper, recognizing that though I've lost the meat, still there's some of the flavor, yet being pissed because of life's imperfection. End of poem.
Oh bravo, Richard. That was a wonderful sound clip. I was hugely impressed by this particular piece. I'm struck by how the adult mind views his or her childhood, along with how desire can create several perfect romantic scenarios, diverse definitions of the perfect woman, and how each carries a semblance of what we seek, or not, as the virtual spirits in us express themselves. This is a poem that is complex, filled with clarity of moments. For me, that fourth stanza, a composite of these at the airport, making a choice difficult, wanting all four, at least three of the four, the one, two, three, Freudian slip, first, third, and fourth, more socially acceptable, besides the psychotic one, deemed evil, especially attractive, since she's repulsive. The attractiveness of something that is vile or repulsive is a theme that is taken up in several other poems tonight. Look, Richard, bravo. Well done. Great SoundCloud. And let's hear from Pam.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, wait, let me see. Am I off mute? Yes, I am. Good for me. All right. Yeah.
Gotta check.
I do. I actually have to physically look at the screen and make sure I'm not just talking to myself. But yes, as always, Richard has an amazing SoundCloud. I thought he chose a pre-write that works really well with the Aleister Crowley quote, dreams are without proportion, without good sense, without truth, so also is consciousness. And also works well with the spirit of Aleister Crowley's writing. I thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors, and I like how he brings in the three different women to be desired, and to me, which works really well as a layered symbolism for the idea of finding the unnamed and unexpected desires of the forbidden within ourselves. And I feel like the three women can actually be literally women, or they can be the different parts of ourselves. And I really liked this all the way through. But I especially like how he describes each woman. And then when he goes, hurting fragile feelings of the first by revealing desires towards third and fourth, then in his eye express repressed guilt, she's too sweet for my senseless exteriors. Everything shifts at a diner, poor within the rich debutante. And isn't that the way it goes in dreams? Dreams are so bizarre, the way time has no meaning within them. It can seem like it's been years, or all of a sudden there's just this shifting of perspective. And I really like how he brings us into the dreaming mind, which oftentimes shows us parts of ourselves that we did not know were otherwise there. So brilliant write by Richard, and very well done.
Yes, thank you, Richard, very much. All right, Pam.
Let's see. All right, well, up next we have Coffin Puffin Abyss Shattering My Tenderness, What a Damn Bloody Shame by Louie Wildove. And go ahead, please, Laurent, and give that a read.
All right. I thank Louie for writing. I know she's going through some treatments that are keeping her away from the radio on certain evenings. Pleasure to read this for her. Puffin, puffin abyss, shattering my tenderness. What a damn bloody shame. Tears drip, continued ring of promised deception, breezy distractions. Twelfth sun, wings, gird, concentration of self. Fancy, schmancy, rewiring, brain's illusionary circuits. Piercing peridot eyes, flap, flop to pessimisms, determination, strength, siphon, out ear canals from Andean windy highlands, snowy miracle, powder to hide, smuggle its round, squeaking wheels onward, rolling, onward going, dirt devil cycles, worship its dust, flake, snowy pearl candy. Feed balls, owning its disease, northeast stinging sand breezes, drawing with limbed mesquite branches, blood drips, drips, scratching dusty rock surfaces, armless spines, its depth undergrowth irregular, atmospheric motions, showing, growing, knowing, the coffin puffin, turning east winds unravel, silvered braids, sleepless twilight, piteous romances, chronicles, moccasin feet planted, toes dividing widespread uninhabited rocks, desert decorations, spineless, neglectful, thoughtful abyss, awaiting the flying jewels to drain repeatedly this flower sucker, a flowering coral, emptying, repeating yet again the arrangement of screaming vacant 30-foot lifeless musings, unclenched needle octillo, arms cursed in an eternal, unnatural emotional drought, an epoch of solitary bedeviled winters, peace in thicket barren lands, winds, forces, blasting, stinging crystal imprints, lies, mortal eyes, leaving me barren, petrified thoughts, and poem.
Great read there, Laurent, and what a powerful write by Louis Wildhove. Brilliant imagery and metaphors, as always, with this strong emotive impact that really just grabs a hold of the heartstrings and, you know, just kind of throws you for a loop with the amount of emotion that is jam-packed into here. I thought this was, to me, an amazing write on staying strong, on trying to stay strong when bombarded by the sandstorms of life that threatens to choke the hope within. And all the way through, her lines are brilliant. But I especially like scratching dusty rock surfaces armed with spines, its depth undergrowth irregular atmospheric motion, showing, growing, knowing, the coffin puffin, turning east winds unravel, silvered braid, sleepless twilight, piteous romances chronicle, moccasin feet planted, toes dividing, widespread uninhibited rocks, desert decorations, spineless, neglectless, thoughtless abyss. You know, you just, the abyss you feel like you begin to be pulled into when you're dealing with such manipulation of emotions and left to fend into yourself in this almost that feels like a spiritual emptiness and trying to get back to yourself. I really like how she brings us into this place of this emotional desert where every grain of sand is something that irritates. So wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, I'd say, and great comment, Pam. Thank you. I was very pleased to see that Louie had written to the contest. Certainly to the topic. And it was a great pleasure to have this poem in the contest. I mean, the imagery that she uses in response to the prompt is almost better than could be hoped for. I was really pleased to be able to read it for her. Louie uses images from nature to great effect. She's one of the most grounded people to the earth that I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. You had quoted a stanza of the moccasin feet planted, Bam, and I was going to quote it was an example of the way her images, her nature images, awaken relationships with other things. A natural emotional drought, an epic of a solitary, bedeviled winters, I really liked, because an emotional drought is unnatural, especially for her, who writes with such emotion. If she finishes with that phrase, lies, more lies, leaving me barren and petrified thought. Truth is so important to her. Lies are such an evil thing. And lie can leave you petrified by its repercussions. Just a wonderful poem by Lou Eustace. It's so skillful. I really appreciate having the piece with us. All right, Pam, we proceed onwards.
All right. And up next we have Is Sanity Just Sanity by Naomi Sarah. And it goes like this. Is sanity just sanity because of limited minds, because accepted by the masses, because there are some kind of invisible normal parameters? Am I mentally ill because I have something different, because I can shift from one operating system to another invisibly? And you wouldn't even know which one, because I don't have to tell you a goddamn thing. Watch me laugh and dance. I am huge, enormously immense. And my bright yellow candy-coated eyes and sugary chocolate-chipped mouth, until with cozy talks, more drugs, inside rooms without door handles, I'm shrinked back to an accepted size, seeing the world through dimmed blue eyes, tasting it through stale pink lips. But no matter the recipe or the mold, flamboyantly designed in my mind or perfectly cut by yours, I am the gingerbread man. Aren't we all? Just because. End poem.
Well read, my dear. Well read. And bravo to Naomi, who is still in the room, still sticking with us. Naomi wrote the prompt number 6. He shall fall down into a pit called Because, and there he shall perish with the dogs of reason. Because is a great word to answer a question with, especially beloved of kids, little children, when asked why they did a particular thing or want to do something. Maybe they've done something they shouldn't have, and they just look down at their feet, and they use that one word, because, which can mean so much. Now, in the poem itself, when Naomi writes back to an accepted size, seeing the world through dimmed blue eyes, tasting it through stale pink lips, but no matter the recipe or the mold, flamboyantly designed in my mind or perfectly cut by yours, I am the gingerbread man. This is truly a fall into the pit of because. Seeing with new vision, old, familiar things, with shifting operating systems. And I love that shifting operating systems. I thought this is too good, Naomi. We're really well done. All right, Pam?
This is a brilliant write. I like the Alice in Wonderland references and how she ends with, I am the gingerbread man, aren't we all, just because? And the idea of declaring yourself as a gingerbread man means, you know, the idea that you have that freedom to run and be yourself, and people will never completely understand you. I really like how she puts, because accepted by the masses, because there are some kind of invisible, normal, and put in parentheses, parameters. Am I mentally ill because I have something different, because I can shift from one operating system to another? The one operating system to another makes me think about, you know, a quote I've seen about autism, which is that idea of, you know, the autistic brain having a different operating system. And yeah, it is ironic that we live in a society that, you know, wants to put up those parameters of who is normal and who is not. But there's so many different ways of thinking. And I thought this was an excellent write on the mind that expands to see things in new and different perspectives. So excellent write, Naomi, and very well done.
Indeed.
All right. And up next, we have Insomnia's Cake by Papa Terminus. And go ahead, please, Laurent, and give that a read.
I will. With pleasure. It's called Insomnia's Cake. Hear the darkness call. As well twilight invades through the keyhole, kaleidoscope cascades, cutting through the mist of insomnia's cake, tender, plump, fingers covered in batter, begging to lick the beater like a child. Locked behind the door, the specter jiggles the handle. Soon there is flicker from the candle. The incantation is spoken. The moon is bright. This night I'll taste the flavor of insomnia's cake, broken bones crushed under the weight of copper stones. Still, the door handle turns. Allow the specter to glide through the doorway, a rat that scurries across my study floor, and insomnia's cake molds on the table. And bravo, Papa, who has a great AN. It's a little bit long to read, but I thought it was, I slept with faith and found a corpse in my arms on awakening. I drank and danced all night with doubt and found her a virgin and other things. All right, Pam, how did you like this?
Yes, I do highly recommend that people who read Papa T's poetry do take time, you know, when they're not on a show, to read his AN, because they often give a lot of insight into his thought process when writing the poem. Of course, you know, I do have to point out that, you know, that he couldn't help but think about the song Mr. Crowley by Ozzy Osbourne, which of course is one of the first things that's what I should have done when you were late. I should have started singing Mr. Crowley by Ozzy Osbourne. Oh, darn it.
Yeah. Well, you can go ahead and do that now.
I don't have the lyrics memorized. It would have just been me going Mr. Crowley over and over again off key, and you would have been like, Ozzy, is that you? So... But this is a beautiful, I thought this had beautiful and brilliant imagery. It was another one that really captures the spirit of Aleister Crowley, which is, you know, it's just, he was so all over the place. And he was such a unique person in his, oftentimes his thoughts and his ability to juggle from one thought to the next. And I really like how, to me, this is an amazing write on the dark, deep, and passionate visions offered up by the mind that cannot grasp sleep. You know, earlier we had a poem speaking about the weirdness of dreams, and this poem speaks on, I don't know if weirdness is right, but the unusual aspects, the unusual way of seeing things when a mind has gone without sleep. And I really like how this all the way through, but a couple of my favorite parts are cutting through the mist of insomnia's cake, tender, plump, fingers covered in batter, begging to lick the beater like a child. And, you know, licking the beater was such a great joy. And you just want that taste, that taste of what it's like to have that mind that's open to new perspectives. So excellent write and very well done.
Agreed, agreed. And I love the image that was used. And he married that image to his words, and I love the gestalt, the mood, the images he uses paint the bizarre state of existence or state of mind without sleep. And I asked him, are you eating the cake as well? And he said, it depends on it. If I have those anxiety monkeys jumping on the bed. Seriously, it's amazing how you can set the mood when you feel deprived of a natural thing such as sleep. But using the idea of insomnia being associated with something which is pleasing, like eating cake, but making it a foreboding experience by adding the ingredients of insomnia and darkness to the theme turns this into quite a foreboding rite. And I absolutely agree with him on that point. You know, I have to commend you for your insights into Crowley, Pam. I thought the 25 rites were a wonderful testimony to the quotes that you chose.
Well, thank you, Laurent. I was happy with the turnout. I know it had a bit of a slow start, but, you know, it did pick up, and that was great to see. I'm loving tonight's poetry. So, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And up next, we have Inside Out by Lockdown Larks, and it goes like this. A coin is an object that must be true when eyes perceive it come into view. To further establish its truth as such, one can test existence by a touch. All things must pass a perception test for inside to relate to an outside behest. The inside gets parental conditioning from this truth tool set it learns to sing. Not yet having any reason to doubt, the inside starts observing the out. It becomes clear there is a polarity. There is you, and then there is me. So two sides to a coin that is clear, which are you inside wants to hear. Are you for real or full of stardust? Inside must know if you it can trust. Finding truth to trust and is a life's ride to be determined by every inside. End poem.
Lovely read, dear. Lovely read. I really enjoyed this particular piece by Lockdown Lark. He wrote to prompt five, the essence of independence has been to think and act according to standards from within, not without. Inevitably, anyone with an independent mind must become one who resists or opposes authority or established conventions, a rebel. If enough people come to agree with and follow the rebel, we now have a devil. And so, of course, still more people agree. And then finally, we have greatness, which I thought was a great prompt. Now, when he says, not yet having any reason to doubt, the inside starts observing the out. It becomes clear there's a polarity. There is you, and then there is me. It was really an excellent exploration of the prompt that he chose. And I do hear a little of the poet bard, Ren Gill, in this work, and it's the sentiments, which I think are universal, not any kind of imitation. It's a wonderful flow. The points within are all well made. Very much enjoyed. And back to you, Pam.
All right. Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful rhyming poem, as always, by Lockdown Larks. And, you know, I do think it's a great take on the prompt, an excellent write on fluctuating perception, but also on how when we're dealing with the masses, we really have to learn to trust our own instinct, because you know, the masses declare something to be the truth, doesn't necessarily mean it's so. We really need to take time to observe and, figure things out. So excellent write and very well done. And up next, Thank you. And up next, we have Dreaming of the Edge of a Broken World, part with an asterisk, and by Time Teller. And go ahead, please, Laurent, and give that a read.
All right. I love the title, by the way, Dreaming of the Edge of a Broken World. Last night, I fell off the side of the earth, drifted around its underbelly, dodging dark matter. I traveled, astral projected, vomited by the particle accelerator, and waking the world outside was dark, full of night. Where was the dawn? Buried under hostages. I wait for the sun rays to burst from corpses as if I were dreaming. Instead, these conscious nightmares beg the living for their consciousness of weapons to let them go. Quick nap, and I am swimming the underbelly of Earth, where the cosmic empathy drips slowly from the tap, poisoned blood. And this dream is wearily repeated again and again. And then the day brings more disorder and more madness, as if the whole world has its glass cortex broken. The cerebellum gives in to the narcotic gore of keep going. And somewhere, men and women are sat in the dark, scribbling tomorrow's chapters over arms deals and missile brochures, as the supermarkets release their Christmas magazines for food. Order now and collect by tank or armored car. And the other day, I dreamt it was already cooked, somewhat burnt. End poem. Oh. And let's see.
A very impressive write, and I have to agree with you, that is a brilliant title. To me, this has amazing imagery and metaphors. The main message that I got from this was the lack of reprieve found as both dreams and reality torment body and mind. And I really like this all the way through, but especially a quick nap and I'm swimming the underbelly of Earth where the cosmic empathy drips slowly from the tap of poisoned blood, and this dream is wearily repeating again and again. And then the day brings more disorder and more madness, as if the whole world has its glass cortex broken. The cerebellum gives in to the narcotic gore of keep going. And I like the phrase, the narcotic gore of keep going. When we get to that point where we'll try anything and everything to keep ourselves awake and away from those nightmares, and yet the living nightmare itself and chaos isn't much better. So excellent write and very well done.
Made some nice points, Pam. Thank you. The reality of the real, a war with dreamscapes that blend horrors and imaginings and everything smells or is burnt. You know, sometimes you get that bleeding through from a dream into the real world that can definitely affect the way that you view the real world. I love the imagery and the flow in this write. I enjoyed that. Well, I enjoyed the whole thing, but towards the end, the last stanza, I believe, and somewhere men and women are sat in the dark, scribbling tomorrow's chapters for arms deals and missile brochures at the supermarkets release their Christmas magazines for food. And it's not just supermarkets. Everybody is releasing their Christmas magazines. Capitalism run amok is starting to rule the day, but collecting it is getting more and more dangerous somehow. Because as he says in the preceding stanza, then the day brings more disorder and more madness, is that the whole world has its vast cortex broken. Cerebellum gives in to the narcotic war. You know, then you get that narcotic feeling, whether it's a high or just a need. And in this case, the narcotic war of keep going. And it can be gory. Keep going, I guess. You have to slide through some awful shit sometimes. Powerful work here, along with a lot of the other powerful works we've read tonight. Very pleased with the entries in this contest. Of course, that makes it more difficult for us in the judging, doesn't it, Pat?
It certainly does. I think right now in my own head, I have probably about 14 or more that I think are amazing. I mean, yeah. But it's a good problem to have. That is for sure.
I guess.
And
okay,
up next we have War and Money by Andre de Corbin. And it goes like this. Statues of defunct heroes stood, arms raised high to the sky as if they were robbed or astonished at seeing assembled angels on strike, furious about unpaid hours wasted on stopping unstoppable wars. Angels tossing away their halos and handing in their resignations. At funerals, money borrowed the shape of pale ghosts rising from the mouths of dead merchants. Money flew on the flags of all nations. Dollar signs flew on the flags of all nations. Tanks slowly heading to border towns at night, even in churches. War and money lit everything, green flames on the pearly white lips of smiling marble saints. End poem.
Wonderful read, Pam. You really expressed the emotion of the piece, I thought. Money and war. It has been said so many times that wars are fought because of the instigation arms dealers and other people who have various logs and various fires. They want to see them burn. The apparent, well, I'll use the word indifference, towards war. It sounds funny to say that, but, you know, we talk about war as a horrible thing and then we engage in it almost which has always amazed me. At funerals, money borrowed the shape of pale ghosts rising from the mouths of dead merchants. Dollar signs flew on the flags of all nations. Every nation, with few exceptions, stands to gain from war. And money is that oil somehow allows it to happen. In the first stanza, I love the frustration felt by angels tossing away their halos and handing in their resignations because of the unpaid hours wasted on stopping unstoppable wars. I thought that was really well done. Thank you, Andre. And Pam, your analysis.
Yes, well, first of all, I was glad to see that Andre shared a write with us, I really liked this all the way through. Strong imagery and metaphors. I do apologize for the stumble over that one part, but after I said money, and I thought, well, no, that's probably supposed to be dollar signs. So hopefully that was the right choice. If not, my apologies to Mr. de Corbin. But I like how the first part speaks on the angels resigning as if it's the actual heavens itself. But at the same time, when it says, you know, assembled angels on strike, furious about unpaid hours wasted, it makes me think of like when nurses and teachers and people who are very much needed, people who I would consider to be angels, going on strike. And throughout the tone of this, with the imagery and the metaphors, it is a powerful right on the money that is sadly invested in war, as those who, a war that rich people invest in and poor people serve in. And, you know, that sigh of exasperation that comes from the heavens. So amazing, amazing, right, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you.
And let me just finish typing one little sentence. There we go. And then I will put up the next right. All right. We have Immersed in Tender Acts by Captain Kerr. And go ahead, please, Lawrence, and give that a read for us.
All right. Not at all familiar with Captain Kerr, but I want to thank him for posting this. Immersed in Tender Acts. Can time contain me in unmeasured length, or light that spreads interminable waves? Can I weave tapestries devoid of touch, or grasp the essence of a flower's breath? My voice will echo from the mountain cliffs, and spew from mouths of hot fissuring springs, enrobed by the blue body of the sea, but never speak in doubt or servitude. Divinity immersed in tender acts has stood apart and sheltered from the din, but prophets arrive heralding the fall, shepherding winds that break a shuttered sky. Gray tassels hang from rich pillowy heads with lips that stutter the credos of wealth. Impoverishment cannot truly bind. What is least becomes greater within me. And poem.
Great read, Laurent. Yeah, it's always great to see a write by Captain Kerr. There's a wonderful flow to this. Even though to me, I don't think it's a rhyming poem, it just has a certain kind of meter to it and word choicing that flows nicely. Really amazing imagery and metaphors, and excellent write on the power within that finds connection with the earth and sky. I really like this all the way through. But, I find that title great because Immersed in Tender Acts, I think, is the idea of, finding the power within our own gentleness. I really like, my voice will echo from the mountain cliffs and spew from mouths of hot fissuring springs enrolled by the blue body of the sea, but never speak in doubt or servitude. Divinity immersed in tender acts has stood apart and sheltered from the din, but prophets arrive heralding the fall, shepherding winds that break a shuttered sky. And I like how this speaks on the power within divinity, and or that divine power within ourselves, but how we can be a reflection of a divine power. So amazing write and very well done.
And a great comment and follow up to that. I had chose then that the vault of the heavens is connected to the rolling hills of earth, shuttered sky and blue body of the sea. It is least becomes greater within me, which you had quoted. you always find the thing that I like and then you quote it. I thought that truly this poem arrives at a certain kind of greatness. It is prompts with 5 and 11. The essence of independence has been to think and act according to standards from within, not without. And the other prompt, time is the border of eternity. Time is eternity formed into tassels. The moments of our lives are all like luxuriant tassels, you know, that the decorations around the edges to the things attached to the garment. And I agree with you on the title, Immersed in Tender Acts, very powerful piece. And yes, it did have a great rhyme and flow. I was ignoring a lot of the rhyming tonight and concentrating instead on the messages that you find within this. And that ending line truly impresses me. Impoverishment cannot truly bind. What is least becomes greater within me. That way that is phrased is delightful. Thank you so much, Captain Kirk. And back to Captain Pam.
Aye, aye, Captain Lawrence. All right.
To my and...
Up next, we have Gasp by Orange Sage. And it goes like this. There's a gasp in the air tonight, choking the moonlight, a long, slow sucking in of the wind. Life is so quiet in its normality. You can hear the turbulence a moment before it begins, breaking down, blowing up the sky, and no, the blood is not in your mind. End poem.
Hey, great read, dear. And Orange Sage, congratulations on this brevity. I wish we had had a few more brevities tonight. I love the title, Gasp. And the line, there is a gasp in the air tonight, choking the moonlight, a long, slow sucking in of the wind. That's nice. And because this talks about the inner turbulence, the wind of the mind rises, the turbulence called I. This is a quote that's been used a number of times this evening, and it really works well. The turbulence called I, and no, the blood is not in your mind. Wow, she makes the point really well in this impactful brevity. I'd like to thank Orange Sage for including it in the evening. And?
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad that Orange Sage was inspired to write something new. And this is definitely a powerful brevity. And, you know, to me at first, it speaks on the turbulence felt within the depths of silence. But I think this is a very layered write. Like, it speaks on that, but it also speaks on the silence before the storm you can hear the turbulence a moment before it begins, breaking down, blowing up the sky. And it actually makes me think of the kind of imagery and sounds that you would hear just as a tornado is approaching. And no, the blood is not in your mind. You know, I like how she leaves it hanging with the idea of that unexpected act of violence that takes control of the moment. And she leaves us kind of almost hanging in the idea that yes, there is blood, but is there hope for life, or does that blood mean the end of life? A really thoughtful write and very well done.
And I agree.
All right, let's see what we have next. We have The Eyes, let me click on that, The Eyes and Ears by Blue Wright 76. And go ahead, please, Laurent, and give that a read.
Well, The Eyes and Ears. 70 years rewound. A little boy on a grandfather's shoulder, walking along the street with his other siblings, where the trees danced in the wind. Water, if not in abundance, but in purity, did flow from small hand pumps, wells, and banyan trees, centers of living, oaks and gardens green, where the sought-after malls. Beware the word of the one, the grandfather said, the one who comes to you bringing the names of their gods and making you believe to deceive. They will gobble your reason and make a worker out of you, just like they did with mine ancestors. The boy who did grow up in stature now sat afore us friends, hands on his sharp and proud mustache, regaling us of how he is always wary of those that can, who seek to suppress the others. Hence, he would like his progeny to be always on the alert, keep away from their men. My friend became the one who lost good friends on the other side. His other brother became the one who reciprocated the hatred to hurt and subdue the voice of those at the other clan. Their sister became the one who lived a busy life, listening to her voice of reason, separated the true men from the garb and the derma, found laughter and love everywhere that it resides. Nothing to worry, my dear, said my darling love. It's all in the eyes and ears of the beholder. A lot of nonsense always happens then and now. In this wide, big world, it all depends on the eyes of the beholder. End quote.
Great read there, Laurent. And what an amazing write by Blue Right 76. I thought the imagery and metaphors in this were brilliant. It was nostalgic, but it was definitely that kind of nostalgic that brings in a sadness as, you know, advice or judgment is passed from one generation to the next. And I see that the different people in this growing, and as they grow, they develop perceptions of their own, thoughts of their own. And, you know, to me, this is really a heartfelt write on seeking to find beauty and understanding in a world that can be filled with manipulation and judgment. I mean, you can understand as that it was probably part of his personal experience. The grandfather who said, beware the word of the ones, the grandfather said, the one who comes to you bringing the name of their gods and making you believe to deceive, they will gobble your reason and make a worker out of you, just like they did with mine ancestors. And, you know, and you can understand how that grandfather would feel that way, as it was probably part of his experience. And then I really like this all the way through. But when he says, my friend became the one who lost good friends to the other side, his other brother became the one who reciprocated the hatred to hurt and subdue, it is, you know, it tears families apart. And then the end where he says, nothing to worry, my dearest and my darling love. It's all in the eyes and ears of the beholder. A lot of nonsense always happens then and now. So, you know, we have to learn to look with our own eyes and see with our own heart. So excellent write and very well done.
And a great read. The beware the word of the one, the grandfather said, the one who comes to you bringing the name of their gods and making you believe the deceive. There is a danger in listening to the snake oil salesman, to the cultist, to the person that acts to grind, to the person who uses religion or politics to literally bend the word, the world, to a crooked will. This is strong stuff, and he has a keen vision of that which has separated brother from brother many times in our history, you know, from the Civil War until today. When we currently examine a heretic who would drown us in all his noise, and no, we are not heretics when we examine the heretic or criticize the heretic. We are doing what we need to do. A great take on the prompt, I thought. All right, Pam, back to you.
All right. I'm just going to go ahead and pick up the next one. And here we go. We have Like Genghis Khan by Paul Tinker. Like Genghis Khan, on returning to the simple purity of steppe life after the slaughter of millions, ultimately ruined by the Pandorian universe of Edwin P. Hubble. However, on the other hand, I said to God, you've done enough creating this galactic stuff. Stop making galaxies go puff. There's too much toxic cosmic fluff. The vastness that you've made of space is far too great for our embrace. Red glare of rockets speak disgrace and makes our world a deadly place. We far too much uranium. It's making life a zero sum. With fizzle, waste, and being dumb, we're going to end up on our bum. We just don't need this cosmic scale. We need to downsize or we'll fail. Return to nature, hunting quail. Farm ancient fields of corn or kale. We'll live in medieval byre and squat around a wood flame fire with pigs and chickens in the mire. Praise the downsized papal choir. The sun spins round the central earth, 6,000 years ago its birth. Galileo's notations have no worth. Copernicus just causes mirth. The earth is flat and not so wide, with edges all around each side, where witches and fiery dragons hide. Thus truly spake our holy guide. Praise the holy Inquisition. They extolled the real position of the cosmos small condition, with, thank God, no nuclear fission. Envoy. Alas, God said, let Hubble be, damn mankind eternally, to live inside infinity, for peering through a lens to see, spake Hubble, let my cosmos be. Thus Edwin Hubble made it so, a vastness more than we may know, inflating, making light seem slow, with woe and foe and status quo. Pandora never sank this low. Now, no thanks to Edwin Hubble, we're no longer in a cuddle, in amongst the straw and stubble, safe in medieval rubble. Blessed with ignorance stands trouble. However, on the other hand, another envoy. But then when I drive home at night, the firmament shines cute and bright and speeds me to the welcome sight of cozy home and pre-cooked bite. Turns TV on, sets aircon right. My comfy couch engulfs me quite, and Hubble Bubble feels so right. End poem.
Nice read, and a great poem. You know, I feel a little bit of a fool on this one. When I read it, I couldn't help but think about the apparent levity in a lot of the lines, but then I decided, no, it's just me, and I better take this seriously. I had this really strange comment. I told them that this was a close look at a universe we are not prepared for, almost a yielding to our world, an admission that man is not man enough to deal wisely with his environment. It is one point of view, technically well made, but one I believe we should not accept. That is purely personal, has no bearing on the evident quality of the work. Well done. And he responds, it was really just intended to be a light, amusing piece with a naive rhyming structure, more like doggerel, to indicate the humorous nature of the poem. I wasn't being serious. And that's when I kind of felt like a fool, because that's what I initially thought, but then decided I was wrong. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, well, this is a wonderful rhyming poem. It is quite clever and definitely a lot to digest. I do like the wordplay in it. And I like how it speaks on the inventions of mankind that allows us to see the expansion of the universe and the mind. You know, and I guess I didn't see the humor at first, but that's the thing. From doing a humor show in the past, I know that humor is different for everybody. I did see the clever wordplay, and there definitely were lines that made me smile, especially with fizzle waste and being dumb, we're going to end up on our bum and return to nature, hunting quail, farm ancient fields of corn or kale. The ironic thing of that is that corn is a modern crop, or a fairly modern compared to other grains. But I like how, to me, this does speak on the importance of science, but reminds us that it's not just all about science. It's about, you know, that connecting with the universe, connecting with something that feels right to us. So definitely a clever write. I look forward to reading more of Paul Tinker, and I'm glad he shared this with us.
Amen.
And up next we have The Enlightened by Asama Chiba. And go ahead, please, Laurent, and give that a read for us.
Certainly, and pleased to do it. The Enlightened. Whoever knows serenity will be bestowed with the splendor of light. The Enlightened is the owner of inward vision, endowed with the power of clairvoyance, able to see the unseen on the path of illumination that represents higher worlds, becoming a perfect being, manifesting the core of spiritual essence when it embraces one's heart, experiencing the divine light upon light from heavens, reaching the uppermost pinnacle of inspiration. End poem. Pam, I'll look to you first.
I was on mute. There we go. I am now off. All right. But a wonderful read there, Laurent. A beautiful spiritual rite by Asama. And I thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors and really spoke on the importance of finding a path of illumination, especially one that's found through serenity. And I really like able to see the unseen on the path of illumination that represents higher worlds, becoming a perfect being, manifesting the core of spiritual essence when it embraces one's heart. Amazing lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Great comment. Able to see the unseen on the path of illumination that represents higher worlds, becoming a perfect being, manifesting the core of spiritual essence when it embraces one's heart. Seeing the unseen fits well into this contest when the ability to view from different perspectives literally illuminates a life in both the philosophical and the spiritual sense. I thought it fit very, very well. It was an excellent piece. Thank you, Asama. It's a pleasure to have you writing for the piece, or entering a piece for the contest, rather. And Pam, back to you.
All right. Up next, we have Hurting by Hannah Lu. Pursued by hounds of logic, we're sought, chased through the forest of rational thought, while scientific thinking explains from above, hurting our instincts to the pit of because. End poem.
Again, very pleased to have this brevity. Hurting, the quote prompt was, he shall fall down into a pit called because, and there he shall perish. The dogs of reason. Once again, the word because is wonderfully used, hurting our instincts to the pit of because. I mean, to quote anything, you have to quote the whole thing again, which I won't do, but it really shows what the mind will do to pursue logic properly. Very clever, very skillfully done. Pam?
This is definitely a clever and skillful brevity. weaving together some of the words from the chosen quote with her own. And I like how she writes on the idea that we can become lost when we, and you mentioned this point about, because, you know, as children we need answers, and at first, you know, as parents we say, because I said so, and then eventually because isn't good enough. And, you know, I like how she is a reflection of the prompt and the idea that we're always seeking reasons why instead of just appreciating the moment. So excellent write and very well done. And let's
great
see what
comment.
We have. Thank you. Great writing tonight, for sure. And up next, we have Empathetic Narcissist Responds by Pootsie Girl. And go ahead, please, Lauren, and give that a read.
Right. Empathic Narcissist Responds. Do you think the first responders are empaths or narcissists? Do you think politicians are conservative liars or liberal racists? It's so dismissive and apathetic to belittle one's passion as strength. It breeds more contempt inside of me and comes out as spite. I've defied gravity only to give it back to you creatures as a gift. The way Hermes gave you fire in which your ingrates sit. There is no t-shirt or size you can fling at me that can surpass the pain my head has suffered like the weight of Atlas's mass. There is no derogatory terminology or connotation you can sling that would hurt me more than nothing but a thing. So contradict your own words, defy my privilege, or smite my compassion. You don't gain some superiority unless you think losing me is a good ration. End poem. And to Pam for the first cup.
Yes, great read there, Lauren. I like the juxtaposition of the phrase empathic narcissist. I thought that was intriguing. And I thought this has wonderful thought-provoking lines that speak on stones casted in judgment. I really, one of my favorite parts here was, there is no t-shirt or size you can fling at me that can surpass the pain my head has suffered like the weight of Atlas mass. And I feel like, you know, that speaks strongly on the whole idea of I'm already my own worst judge and critic. You know, I don't need you casting your words along with the ones that already exist in my head. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. You know, I thought the title, Empathic Narcissist, was almost a contradiction. On the one hand, you have an empath, one who feels strongly the emotions of someone else, and then narcissist, someone who's concerned primarily with his or her own pleasure, own emotions, own aspects. So that contradiction immediately aroused my interest. And, well, look. My interest was well rewarded with this piece. The penultimate stanza or couplet, there is no derogatory terminology or connotation you can sling that would hurt me more than nothing but a thing. You know, to be dismissed as nothing but a thing, how painful to the empath, but how cruel to the narcissist. To have passions dismissed as nothing important, a slap in the face which gains nothing at all except goodbye. Well done, Pootsie Girl. And Pam?
All right. Up next we have Always, Always by Kendall. And it goes like this. We choose these roads we must travel, walking in wisdom and grace, seasoned in salt, pounding the asphalt, trying to beat the gravel, because everyone likes shooting fish in a barrel while we're walking with God and running with the devil. just waiting for the dust to settle, living somewhere in the middle, walking steadfast, living our best Sunday. Afterwards, night meets day and light gives way. From another predator, we watch him prey. It's so beautifully blind, living under a veil, looking past the ghost, looking past the homeless ghost, living in a nutshell, chasing old wives' tales, pointing to heaven or hell. Just another sideshow attraction in a dime museum, waiting on change after we see him. So wicked is my tongue, it's been held with a bridle, because I've been walking with God and running with the devil, just waiting for the dust to settle, living somewhere in the middle. End poem.
Lovely read there. It's so beautifully blind, living under a veil, looking past the homeless ghost, living in a nutshell, chasing old wives' tales, pointing to heaven or hell. You know, people can be very, very cruel with what they say. But when she writes, so wicked is my tongue, it's been held with a bridle, it's as if the tongue can be so evil and yet spontaneous at the same time. And you literally have to control the tongue. In this case, the metaphor is a bridle. Because even though you walk with God and you say and the right thing and act the right way, etc., you can still run with the devil in another point of view, just waiting for the dust to settle, living somewhere in the middle. Yes, betwixt and between. I appreciated this a great deal. I thought it fit well into this contest, and has been entered in a number of contests and scored everything from gold to bronze to the green. Well done, my friend, Kendall. Pam?
Yes, wonderful poem, and you're right, it did fit well with this contest. Great observations there, Laurent. I really like his imagery and metaphors in this, and how he has, to me, a bit of a sense of humor with the lines, because everyone likes shooting fish in a barrel while we're walking with God and running with the devil, just waiting for the dust to settle, living somewhere in the middle. You know, this kind of reminds me of Fazi's show, Part Sinner, Part Saint, and the whole idea that we all, you know, that we all have that sinner and saint within us. And oftentimes, I like how this speaks on walking the fence and the idea of wanting to take the middle line and not wanting to take sides, which can be a real struggle. But amazing imagery and metaphors. And another idea that, well, this spoke to me also on the dullness of the eyes, you know, the idea that we don't often see what's right in front of us, and the cruelty of the tongue. You know, you brought that up, but the metaphor, the imagery of the bridle attached to the tongue was particularly clever, because on one hand, while we don't necessarily want to completely bite down on the tongue, we want to be able to express ourselves. At the same time, there does have to be that sense of control over what we say and when and where we say it. So excellent write by Ken, and very well done. And that was our last write on the board. Great show tonight, Laurent.
Great
lineup.
We have about 6 minutes left, and there is a poem that I did not post for one reason or another that I think I'm going to post and read.
Okay.
Because look, that's only fair. And it's by Jim Bellamy. And I don't know, it's not that long. I'll try and give it a read. Let me post the link. I can do this quickly enough. And get back in the room because I'm totally lost. Here we go. There we are. All right. Jim Bellamy. A about cosmetics and cinematics. At the eddied edge of day, I watch dead suns flower. The undercurrents of a city's shower leave Lita to undress. And oh, we have seen the mind following sadness under the wives of keen night. The star of wine shines for dead summers, and the germy gash of givers whines for bad ponies and thunder. At the dizzy edge of graves, we scatter our own ashes and the molten mentails of a digital hour lashes, domed breasts and cunt, as a post-op transgresses times, then old spunk fries. Silence, oh, the sex act of a sea harness flies into sawn rain, and the doctors under grain drag lakes for drowned honeys, and when once bivouacs of pain shelter nudes in old money, then silence will smother wankers. A laden, a yawned sea prison unlocks piled clocks and dead men that float above green waves, the victims of distended graves, dapple daffs with tea slave kissers, old canyons cry for cinematics. Happiness falls away, just like love's comic fugue. Oh, the trees of day fall and flail. The sisters of the grave scatter their own keen ashes, and the cars of scent crash under mad pigs and lashes. Emptiness falls down, just like a kid in a noose, and the critters of a cave use purple and pomades. This side of a sad smile, we heave numbered blithe bummers. Inside green lays, brawly boys in state, lobby men, and the wives of distaste trample hirsute furred perfumes. Hapless women pay for pain. Underneath a red flume, we return to disabled afternoons, because we come to all outside the rain. Then we dare not dampen city flame and the transitory veins of God. Tuck syringes into pure fire, and the hugs of love defined in your fathers, and the bugs of drugs damn blue throats' feathers, because we come to squat inside the rain. Then we will never suffer soft pain, and the cops of cares carry valves to hens and heaping murderers. The crapping cries of the city's killers sits against wives, and oh, when once a mirror takes his blind veil, then tarots under fireland, Ouija whores to occult clogs and starred dice sails, when once mean fools swagger in yellow news, clads corners within green maids and nudes. The mad mental hills where we made our fame collide with guns and ashes. Oh, the sad scented pills we took campaign after killer children and elderberry eye jibes. You know, I was struck by the opening lines in this poem and the reference to Lita. The language in this poem is nuanced and abstract enough that a strong author's notes would be welcome to this. The imagery is genuinely powerful and evocative with great flow. You want to say something for about 30 seconds, Pam, and we will be done.
Brilliant imagery and metaphors, thought-provoking lines, and this speaks to me on the constant flow of negative energy in a violent world. And I always appreciate Jim's unique style that he presents his rights in. So very well done.
Yeah, I was genuinely taken aback by the, you know, the welter of imagery and my inability to somehow put it all together. But when you said that the constant flow of negative energy in a violent world, that did make sense to me. So you were able to do what I could not do, Pam, which you probably do all the time. Hey, sorry about that stump, that clumsy opening to the show tonight. And thanks again to Gene for waking my poor old ass up and just in time, although we did have some dead air, I'm sure. Hope she's not too pissed. All right, Pam, wishing you well. We'll have another contest in 2 weeks. I invite everyone to attend. Perhaps we'll get a reader or two, or three. You never know.
Absolutely. Hopefully.
Good night,
well,
all.